Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
We have a very special Best of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast for this October 18th. We're going to study how Walter Camp created the game of football, turned rugby into football, as Grange and Brady had great performances, and a racial and gender barrier breakthroughs, all coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and we have got an enormous podcast for you today with all kinds of football history that was really, really important to the game of football. And we're going to get right at it as we start off on October 18th, 1880 in New York City. The great Walter Camp presents a rules revision to set the limit of 11 players on the field for each team. Prior to that, teams would have anywhere from 12 to 25 players per side participating on the field with the ball put in play. He also created what was called a snap to prevent chaos of teams fighting for the ball in a scrum. So in essence, he invented the scrimmage at that point in time too. So, ball, this would be 11 players a side, set with a snap, with a scrimmage set. Sounds like football to me. That's when it started, October 18th, 1880. Another big one. October 18th, 1902, in Birmingham, Alabama, the famous Iron Bowl is played for the seventh time as Auburn defeats their longtime rival Alabama 23-0. The term Iron Bowl comes from almost as a tribute to the city of Birmingham's involvement in the steel industry. The Crimson Tide holds the advantage at the same time of this writing of 45 wins and compared to 36 victories for the Auburn Tigers through the history of the series. There was only one tie in a series between these two founding members of the SEC, and that occurred in a year, 1907. Our next stop on the football timeline is October 18th, 1924 in Urbana, Illinois. That's when Harold Red Grange, also known as the Galloping Ghost, may have played his best collegiate football game in his career on that day. Per the source of the New York Times archive article from the day of October 18th, 1924, from the Associated Press, Grange, in front of 67,000 fans packed into the new Illinois Memorial Stadium, witnessed the Ghost and his Illinois teammates take apart their rival Michigan University. Red Grange, the University of Illinois phenom and All-American halfback, was a star attraction of his play and did not disappoint the onlookers. Grange displayed a remarkable exhibition of running and passing in the game and set the college game as what would be the measuring stick of a truly great individual performance in the gridiron for years to come. The Ghost galloped hard that afternoon as he scored 5 of Illinois' 6 touchdowns, leaving no doubt in anyone's mind on how hard it was to defend against him. It started on the opening kickoff as Grange scooped up the ball on the Illinois 5-yard line and raced 95 yards through the Michigan 11 for a touchdown in less than 10 seconds into the contest. Before the Michigan team could catch their breath and collect themselves, Red Grange had struck pay dirt multiple more times in rapid succession with runs of 66, 55, and 40 yards respectively for his next 3 scores. Coach Bob Zupke took him out of the lineup before the quarter ended. He returned later to launch several successful passes for a score in a 5th touchdown in the second half. The final score had the Illini with 39 points and the Wolverines scoring 14. Red was the first collegiate star to turn pro, signing with the Chicago Bears in 1925, and he became the face of the pro game, eventually making a name not only for himself, but for a young National Football League. We hope right now, while you're taking this little break from our football history, that you'll hit the subscribe button on this podcast player, and also that you'll email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. And now a couple words from one of my buddies at the sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, this is John Gidley. Join me each Friday for a trip into the football attic, where I'll delve into forgotten but noteworthy stories of the National Football League. You're bound to learn something new or have your memory jogged each week. That's every Friday, only on the Sports History Network and wherever podcasts are available.
Next, we have another big event in football history that happened on October 18th, 1953 at Wrigley Field in Chicago, Illinois. Willie Thrower had the perfect name for an NFL quarterback. What was truly remarkable is what a pioneer in American professional football history he was. A ChicagoBears.com article shows how Willie overcame unbelievable obstacles when he became the first NFL quarterback in modern times to be of African-American descent. The contest pitted the Chicago Bears against the San Francisco 49ers, and the Bears' starting quarterback George Blanda was struggling. Papa Bear George Halas could not watch any more of Blanda's ineffective play in the contest, so he was looking for an offensive spark, so he sent in the promising backup quarterback Willie Thrower. Thrower was a collegiate quarterback with the national champion Michigan State Spartans of 1952. The Niners rendered Willie's effectiveness too, allowing him to throw a mere completion rate of 3 of 8 passes for 27 yards. Halas soon returned to Blanda in the game, but the San Fran squad had the Bears' number on that day as the game resulted in a 35-28 Niners victory. Willie played in only one more game for the Bears in 1953 before being released by Halas, but though his playing career was short, it certainly had a tremendous impact. Willie Thrower helped to pave a way that many others followed. NFL legend Warren Moon mentioned Willie Thrower in his Pro Football Hall of Fame acceptance speech, thanking him for providing the inspiration to Moon's football journey. Next stop, October 18, 1981, in the Kingdome in Seattle, Washington. New York Giants kicker Joe DiNello tied an NFL record 6 field goals in a game for the ProFootballReference.com. As the G-men cruised to a comfortable 32-0 shutout of the Seahawks. Successful DiNello kicks were from 29, 54, 21, 47, 31, and 37 yards, helped pad the Giants' score in the rout. October 18, 1992, Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Randall Cunningham sets an NFL quarterback career scramble yardage record of 3,683 yards on this day. When we started the podcast, we told you we had some big headlines for October 18th, and they keep staying big as we go to October 18th, 1997, and Liz Heaston became the first woman to score in a college-level football game as she kicked 2 extra points for the NAIA's Willamette University. The university's website, WEUBearcats.com website, recounts the event with a story that Heaston as a woman soccer player from the university and that she was in one of head football coach Dan Hawkins' classes during the fall semester. When the starting kicker of the football team, Gordon Thompson, suffered an injury with no backup on the roster and the men's soccer schedule conflicted with the football team's, Coach Thompson went to another resource. One of his students that was on the women's soccer team, one Liz Heaston. Heaston was an honorable mention in the NCAA Division III All-American selections, and she helped the ladies of Willamette win 4 conference titles in soccer. Liz had 3 weeks of practice on the gridiron before she stepped her 5'5", 135-pound frame onto the field. The schedule for that October Saturday timed out just right for Liz. She played a home soccer game that day at noon, and as soon as the soccer clock hit zero, she tore off the field and slipped into the shoulder pads and helmet on the football field to play in the Willamette football team's home game against Linfield University. Then it happened. With little clock remaining in the first half, Liz Heaston strolled out on the field and knocked through an extra point. The crowd went wild, but then there was a pause. A flag had been thrown by one of the officials. Could history just been undone? Offsides on Linfield. Liz Heaston had just become the first woman to score points in an organized, regular collegiate football game. The season for the Willamette Bearcat football team was truly memorable, not only with Liz's great milestone accomplishment, but the team went undefeated until they lost to Findlay, Ohio in the NAIA championship game by the score of 14-7. Liz's other team, the women's soccer team of Willamette, they played well too, finishing 18 wins, 3 losses, and 1 tie. And Liz Heaston was part of each of their success and for breaking through the barrier where a woman put her mark in a place that had traditionally been a place where only men had tread. Just when you think the headlines are going to settle down, we have another big name that happened on October 18th in the year 2009 at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, the GOAT, threw 5 second-quarter touchdown passes against the Tennessee Titans, setting an NFL record for touchdown passes in 1 quarter. Brady finished the day with 6 scoring strikes in the game as the Patriots shelled the Titans 59-0. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, to not only see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskin Dispatch is in the social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Pigskin Dispatch is also happy to be associated with the Sports History Network, the sports headquarters of yesteryear, found at sportshistorynetwork.com. And now it's time to remember some of those Hall of Famers on their birthday for this October 18th. And we'll start in the year 1902 in Phillipsville, New Jersey, as Charlie Bailey, the end from Lafayette College, was born. Charlie played collegiate football from 1921 through 1924 for the Leopards. Barry earned the distinction of making the great Walter Camp's last hand-picked All-American team just short of the time before the innovator of football's untimely death. Per the National Football Foundation's article on Charlie, in his 4 years at Lafayette with the Leopards, he compiled a record of 29 wins, 5 losses, and 2 ties, with the 1921 team going undefeated. Charlie went on to play professionally for the NFL's Pottsville Maroons, and it was the equivalent of being an All-Pro during the time. The great athlete also played in pro baseball's major leagues as well for the Philadelphia Athletics, Boston Red Sox, and the Chicago White Sox, and even umpired in the MLB. The National Football Foundation selected Charlie Bailey to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1980. Our next visit is October 18, 1914, and that's when Joe Rout arrived into the world. Joe is a two-way guard from Texas A&M, and he was individually an exceptional player on some very poor college teams with the Aggies in the 1930s. To counter his exceptional play, opposing teams would negate his effectiveness by triple-teaming Rout, as he was that good, according to footballfoundation.org's website. He would eat up so many blockers that would free up his defensive teammates to make the play. College Football Hall of Fame elected him into their hall in 1962. Rout was the 16th overall pick by the Cleveland Rams in the 1938 NFL draft. He died a war hero during World War II with the U.S. Army Infantry, leading his troops during the famous Battle of the Bulge in Europe. Our next Hall of Famer was born on October 18, 1933, and his name was Forrest Gregg, the famous offensive lineman from Southern Methodist University. Gregg was a 1956 NFL Draft second pick by the Green Bay Packers. The Pro Football Hall of Fame states that he was considered too small to be guard by most, as he weighed only 249 pounds and stood at 6 foot 4 inches tall. So Vince Lombardi, the head coach of the Packers, put him in as a tackle. Forrest Gregg learned techniques of finesse to nullify the rushes of bigger, more powerful NFL defensive ends to survive, and he won all NFL acclaim 8 straight seasons from 1960 through the 1967 seasons and was selected to play in 9 Pro Bowls in his 15 NFL seasons. 14 of those seasons were with the Packers, and the last being with the Dallas Cowboys. He was on 3 Super Bowl champion teams during his career and 6 NFL/NFC championship teams. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Forrest Gregg in 1977. Gregg went on to coach in the NFL for many seasons after his playing days, but his greatest honor may have been from his former coach, Vince Lombardi, who in his book, Run to Daylight, stated matter-of-factly, "Forrest Gregg is the finest player I have ever coached." We would be remiss on any football show talking about Hall of Fame birthdays of October 18th if we didn't go to Carnegie, Pennsylvania in 1939 when Michael Keller Disco was born. A story on ChicagoBears.com in December 2007 relays that the Ukrainian surname Disco was difficult to pronounce, as I'm having trouble saying right now, in his hometown, so the family changed his name to Ditka. Mike Ditka was a 3-sport star at the local Alquippa High School. The University of Pittsburgh was the college of choice by Ditka after Notre Dame and Penn State also recruited the youngster. He may have been the best pure tight end the college game had ever seen at that point, as he revolutionized the position not only with the traditional blocking, but he also caught passes quite frequently. Mike was also the punter for the Panthers for his 3 seasons there. In 1961, the NFL draft, Mike Ditka was the first pick by the Chicago Bears, and he became a star of the 1963 Chicago NFL Championship team. Per the Football Hall of Fame's bio on Iron Mike, he was the Rookie of Year in 1961, and he received all NFL honors in 4 different seasons. Ditka set a career record for tight end receptions when he retired at 427 catches and finished with 5,812 yards receiving and 43 touchdowns. Brilliant tight end played in 5 straight Pro Bowls to start his career and did not miss a minute of his 84 games played with the Bears. In 1967, Chicago traded Ditka to the Eagles. There in Philadelphia, he suffered an injury while with the Philadelphia team that ended his streak of games and hampered his playing time there. In 1969 season, he found himself playing in Dallas, playing 4 seasons there as he scored the final touchdown in a Dallas Cowboys Super Bowl VI victory. The College Football Hall of Fame selected him to enter into their hall in 1986, and the Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Mike Ditka in the year 1988. Ditka went on to coach and coached the Chicago Bears to the 1985 championship of Super Bowl XX, and he also coached and made some big trades while with the New Orleans Saints. We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's 4th and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.